baby.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. Looking like we're going to have an exciting end to the NBA season, even though the Bucks aren't in it.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into all of that I've got a very special guest. It is a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show, so enjoy the best of Motown all morning on the Earl Ingram Show. But I am joined by none other than Mr. Morris Pearl. He is a patriotic millionaire, and so every other Monday at this time, we will be joined by a member of the patriotic millionaires. He's the chair of the board of directors for the Patriotic Millionaires. Let me read this paragraph quickly, and then we'll go directly to my guest. Morris Pearl currently serves as the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, a group of hundreds of high net worth Americans. Calvin, your name's not in there for Patriotic Millionaires.
No, not quite.
Okay, not quite. Yeah, 24 years old, he's still early, a little young. Group of hundreds of high net worth Americans who are committed to making all Americans, including themselves, better off by building a more prosperous, stable, and inclusive nation. That sounds great. The group focuses on promoting public policy solutions that encourage political equality, guarantee a sustainable wage for working Americans, and ensure that millionaires, billionaires, and corporations pay their fair share of taxes. It is with that backdrop that I welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show none other than Mr. Morris Pearl. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Great to be on your show, Earl. Thank you very much.
So let's start at the beginning. It's always best to start there. Who are the Patriotic Millionaires?
Sure. We've got a group of hundreds of people from all over the United States who really believe the current status is unsustainable. We're seeing a few people get richer and richer and richer. And part of it is because people like me pay far lower tax rates than people like you and Calvin. You know, I sit here and I just watch the numbers on my screen go up and I'm making money, but I don't pay taxes. Whereas somebody like Calvin gets money deducted from his paycheck every single week. And that's why the people who are already rich are getting richer and richer and richer. And so many Americans are just having trouble getting by. And it's not going to work forever that way. We have to make a change because I'm seeing people just kind of give up on America. You know, we're seeing people marching in the streets, and yeah, some of that's, you know, because somebody was murdered here. And I mean, there's all kinds of serious issues with police and violence, all kinds of things. But I think the root cause of the problem is that millions of Americans feel like they're being treated like second-class people, and they're right, and they're giving up. And we have to change course, you know, before we lose what we have.
You know, Mr. Pearl, there's this constant griping, unfortunately, from people who claim to be on the right, that businesses are being taxed too much. The wealthy is being taxed too much. You hear this refrain over and over and over again, and even average Americans are saying that the wealthy is being taxed too much. What do you say to that?
Oh, that's ridiculous. You know, I'm here in New York, and yes, there are some complainers, but even the complainers are people who made lots of money when they're paying tax rates of 70, 80, and 90% back in the 1960s and 70s. I'm old enough to remember when a lot of things were great, and we built, you know, huge hospitals and sent people to the moon and did all kinds of things, and it worked partially because the very richest among us, the most successful, were paying tax rates hugely higher than anybody is paying now, and it worked just fine. I think that's the most ridiculous argument of any of them, really.
You know, I don't have to tell you that there are text messages coming in that really agree totally with you. And people, I guess, wonder, you know, how you're able to mobilize so many people who are doing well who agree with you. Because on the other side, I'm sure the other people who are like you guys are saying, hey, we got to figure out a way to set those people up.
Well, sure, because most people understand that. You know, I don't get to Wisconsin too often, but I remember talking to Alex Lazary, one of the executives of the Bucks,
right,
about their stadium and the, you know, the plans to have the Democratic convention there a few years ago. Even he realizes that he can't run a business when you have people who can't afford to shop in your business and to buy tickets and do things like that. I met with people that own an airline, you know, that covers most of South America, and they're afraid. They've seen people riding in the streets there too. And I think a lot of rich people are realizing that. You know, not everybody. You know, I was just by the Langone Pavilion of the huge hospital downtown. Ken Langone made tons of money. He was one of the founders of Home Depot. And he doesn't like paying taxes. But he made millions of dollars and donated enough to build a huge hospital when he was paying a tax rate of over 70%. And he still lives in New York City. And he's perfectly happy.
You know, hospitals are being shut down in rural America, all over this nation. And so these are American citizens. And how can it possibly be that we talk about we live in the greatest nation on earth when we can't even figure out a way to make sure that the American people, the wealthiest nation on earth, can get to neighborhood hospitals to address their illnesses?
Well, because so many people listened back 40 some odd years ago when Ronald Reagan told them, oh, the government is the enemy and you have to do everything for yourself. And they thought, oh, we shouldn't have government hospitals. We should have private businesses that provide health care to those who can afford it. Is it more efficient? Well, if you judge efficiency by profits, sure. People are making lots of money running private hospitals, and even the hospitals that sort of claim to be public are really multi-billion dollar businesses that run a little bit of charity or education on the side. So if you measure efficiency that way, well, yeah, more money is being made in the current system. But if you measure efficiency like you should, like how everyone in the country is being treated, no, it's a terrible idea. And so it's people disagree on the goal. For some people, the goal is, oh, get rid of government and, you know, everything can be done by the invisible hand of private enterprise. And it doesn't work that way. And it never has and it never will. Even private businesses depend on a government and a society to survive. Those hospitals would not work at all if not for all of the rules and regulations that allow them to collect bills and allow them to get reimbursed by Medicare and all these other things that run, you know, private health insurance companies. We all depend on government, but somehow so many rich people, they don't see it when it's benefiting them. That's just kind of the way the world is. But when the people acting together, and the word for people acting together is government. When people acting together do something they don't like, oh, no, you're intruding on my space. And we have to prevent that. And we just have to change that attitude.
If you are just joining us this morning, this is a new segment that will be appearing every other Monday on the Earl Ingram Show, The Patriotic Millionaires. I'm joined by the chairman, Mr. Morris Pearl. And, you know, I had a chance to read your book, Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and lobbyists make the rich even richer. I think the fact, sir, that you are able to, as a wealthy person, say the things that many of us average citizens have been saying and totally ignored is what makes this so powerful. You guys can speak from the platform of the wealthy and corroborate what many of us have been saying for the longest time. Hey, all we want is a fair shake and a fair opportunity in a nation that promises that to us.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't worked since I was in my early 50s, but I make more money now than I did when I was working, and I pay far lower tax rates now than I did when I was working. And that's part of what makes the rich get richer and so many other people struggle to get by, is that people who are working for a living are paying far higher tax rates than people who are not. And somehow we have to change the attitude that, oh, working people, we don't care about them. But investors, oh, investors are special. They might, I don't know, go on strike or move to Mars or something if we have to make them pay taxes. So we have to really have a, you know, policy of not bothering them. Like, the idea that investors might, I don't know, go on strike or something is just absurd.
So a guy who's running for president of the United States again has said, we need more tax breaks for the wealthy. We don't need, you know, we have to make sure that those tax breaks remain where they are for the benefit of all the American people. What do you say to that?
I mean, he honestly believes that making rich people, like particularly real estate developers, have lower taxes is good for the nation. And that is pretty obviously not right. But even people on our side, even progressive Democrats, they sort of buy into that. It's been 40 years of them being told that. And I was meeting in this room just recently, and somebody said, oh, the way to get better housing is tax breaks for real estate developers. And I just thought, oh, my God.
So hang on a second. On the line, Mr. Morris Pearl, he is the chairman of the board of directors of the Patriotic Millionaires. It's going to be every other Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. 844-967-2789 is the number if you have a question or comment. Welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You know, my guest is Mr. Morris Pearl. He is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. If you have a question or comment, you know, now's the time. So, sir, I would say to you that it is so refreshing to hear. So how long have you guys been in existence? And how did you guys come into existence?
Look, it started early in the Obama administration, just after the elections in 2010. He'd been in office for almost 2 years. And then the tax breaks that W put in place after the 9/11 terrorist attack were going to expire. And we thought, this is ridiculous that rich people are going to have their taxes permanently lower anyway. So we said, you know, the founder, Erica Payne, who was a marketing genius and had worked for the Democratic Party during the 90s. She got together a bunch of people she knew, and we signed a letter saying, President Obama, let these tax breaks expire just for the richest people. Let it go back from 34 to 39% or something like that. And of course, he compromised and got more unemployment benefits and whatnot. But eventually, we did temporarily succeed. And taxes did actually go up a few percentage points for the top bracket. And of course, they've gone down a lot since then after the 2017 change in the law. But that was their basic thing is the letter was signed, the Patriotic Millionaires. And that got all kinds of press. People thought, oh my God, patriotic millionaires are for progressive policies? Because somehow the right, the people who want to become richer and richer and richer and don't care about other people, they somehow told Americans that they're the patriotic ones. They're the ones who want to like make everyone be independent, like, you know, Ronald Reagan riding his horse around on his ranch. And like, they honestly think that that's how all Americans should live. Having a big ranch and being by yourself and not having any connection with your neighbors and other people. But most Americans don't live that way. Most Americans live in places like New York and Milwaukee, where we actually do know our neighbors and actually live near other people and interact with other people. And we have things we do in common, like building schools and hospitals and roads and all kinds of things that we do together collectively. And we do things together. And that's actually the way America works, is people acting together to get things done that they can't do themselves. And we have a word for that, and the word is government. And that just means people acting together to get things done and everyone making a contribution to getting things done, each person paying their fair share. And originally, when the country was founded, we did charge each person based on how wealthy they were. We measured people's land, and the only taxes we had were real estate taxes back in the early 18th century. But then, you know, we changed things. We have income taxes now. So we don't charge people taxes based on how rich they are mostly. We charge them based on this thing called income. And people who have a job, well, that's easy. They have a paycheck and you just deduct part of their income every week. People like me who are investors, what's my income? Well, it could be zero and I could live very well because I can just withdraw money from my brokerage account every single month, but that's not income. That's just withdrawing money. And so it's ridiculous that somebody like me lives very well and pays far lower tax rates than other people. And that was the basic thing that we founded the thing on. And then we also moved into a few other things. We work for higher minimum wage. We think that if every worker makes enough money to support themselves, that will actually improve the country. And we want to change our campaign finance system so that people who are in office don't spend all of their time visiting me here, but spend more time actually in the states where they represent, talking to the people who they're supposed to be representing.
So how do, two things. I'm a guy who, you know, worked in industry in the 70s and for 30 years. And the corporations were civic minded. The heads of the corporations knew that it was important that they be engaged and involved in their neighborhoods and in their communities. The patriarchs, the people who founded those corporations, were hand in hand involved with the communities. So I saw it go from that to once those patriarchs who were on the boards and ran the boards passed on or got too old to run it and turned it over, I saw the change come. When the families who were civic-minded left. And then I saw the major change come in when these corporations then came in and the CFOs and the CEOs abandoned the reality of what those companies and the patriarchs of those companies thought was important, then their civic duty, if you will, and to get us to where we are now. Now, I want to say we've got one of the worst changes, and this is Tony, One of the worst changes in our thinking has been that any collective action is a bad thing. Your thoughts, Mr. Pearl?
We need collective action. This country was built with collective action. And it's changed a lot over the years. I remember, you know, Michael Douglas was on Wall Street. He said, greed is good, and people believed him. That was just after Ronald Reagan said, you know, the government is your enemy, and or something like that. And that's what happened. When Bloomingdale's was run by Bloomingdale himself, he was in it for the long term. He wasn't concerned just about how much profit he was going to make that month. He was concerned about how valuable his stores were going to be in a year, in 2 years, in 5 years, in 10 years, when his children inherited them. But now, these businesses, whether it's car companies or stores, are owned by the investors in the stock market. And they've been taught, oh, we only care about what's going to happen in the next 3 months. No, we can make more money this quarter if we just close the business down and sell the equipment or something. And that's what they do. And they don't care about the 6 months from now, much less 6 years from now. And that's what's caused our problem, is this kind of short-term thinking that, oh, we need more freedom so people can just buy companies and shut them down if that can make more money than you continue to run them.
You know, Mr. Pearl, I hate that our time has come to an end, but I'm really thrilled and excited about the prospects of us having these conversations every other Monday. This is being heard across the state of Wisconsin, and hopefully we'll have some impact. Thank you very much for your time. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
See you soon. Thank you, Earl.
All right. 844-967-2789 is the number. You can join us on the other side.
How am I doing? You really want to know? Oh, I guess I'm doing fine. It's been so long now, but it seems like it was only yesterday. Ain't it funny? It's so funny how time can slip right on away. I want to ask you a question, is it all right? How's your new love? I wonder, can you truthfully...
All right, welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, I just had on Mr. Morris Pearl. And Morris Pearl is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. And he spoke volumes. It's amazing. You know, the average person. Now, I was kind of surprised, Calvin. We didn't get any calls from normally the conservatives who call and say, well, you're taxing the rich too much. Why are you taxing the rich? Well, here's a man who clearly stated, and he's got many others like him, you're not taxing us enough. And yet, you know, not a mumbling word, not a peep from those people who constantly call and defend that the wealthy is paying too much in taxes. You know, it is refreshing, to say the least, that there are people who have the intestinal fortitude and, you know, to say that we've got to change this. What's in the best interest of the American people? It's not that a handful of us continue to get wealthy. You know, Mr. Pearl said himself, he basically said, Calvin, I don't need anything anymore. I don't have to go to work now. Now, mind you, you know, here's a man who was a managing director at BlackRock, one of the largest investment firms, not in the United States, in the world. His work included the Maiden Lane transactions and assessing governments' potential losses from bank bailouts in the United States and in Europe. Prior to BlackRock, Mr. Pearl had a long tenure on Wall Street, where he invented some of the securitization technology connecting America's capital markets to consumers in need of credit. He is a CFA charter holder, a member of the CFA Institute, the New York Society of Securities Analysts, and on the board of Verified Voting and the Center for Political Accountability. Mr. Pearl lives in New York City. Now, he didn't need any more money. He's got his share. And yet he and all of these other patriotic millionaires have decided that they're going to push back on what has clearly been a con on the American people, a calumny on the American people, that the corporations are paying too much money. And so you little people, you know, you need to continue to scuffle for the crumbs that we leave at the table. And this is where we are. And this is why those who are on the right, those who are, you know, conservative, who continue to lead people to believe with all that they're wealthy, people like Donald Trump, that they are concerned about the average person. So what is Donald Trump talking about? Making sure that the tax cuts for the wealthy stay where they are. You know, and yet the average American who continues to struggle and suffer is led to believe that Joe Biden and Democrats are the ones who have their foot on their necks. It's not the case. It's never been the case. And so I can come in here every day and say that over and over and over. But who am I? I'm an average Joe with, you know, who struggles to pay my bills. But when a man of the financial stature of Morris Pearl and all of the people who are with him, you know, billionaires and others, who come out and openly, Calvin, say the system is wrong. That's encouraging, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I agree. We have this perception that rich people are kind of driven by their money and that's all they care about. And knowing that there's at least, even if it's a minority, knowing that there's a group of rich people that do care about the well-being of, I guess, us to right. speak as like the people who aren't wealthy, is it's good to know.
Hey, Calvin, yes, it's okay to include you and I in the us. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. I mean, I'm excited about being able to have this dialogue and conversation on this show. Every other Monday, we're going to drill down. We're going to get into some meat and potatoes about what is really happening. And the great thing is we can have this before the election. And we'll have this again and again and again. And we will, you know, take calls. But it is telling that the conservative people that we have called, who I know are listening, who had an opportunity to have this dialogue and conversation, didn't, you know, utter a mumbling word. Calvin, who do we have on?
We have Robert from West Dallas.
Hey, Robert, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. Your thoughts, sir. Good morning to you.
Good morning. My thought is I love that they're doing that. And the other thing is, in the election, I think we have to just break it down for people. We have to talk issues and policies. And, you know, there's a guy in the morning show in Chicago who's also on the family meeting. He says, you know, say to your conservative friend, you know, what are three things, not generalities, but three things that, you know, Donald Trump and the Republicans did when they're in power that improved your life, you know, and then be prepared to answer the three things that, you know, Joe Biden or Obama or whoever else did. And I think if we get down really to that level, the policy issue level, and really put it to people that way, maybe it'll get them thinking. You know, not the general stuff, hello, we're building a wall or whatever, but really three things that impacted your life personally.
Well, you know, it's Robert, it's not hard for me to come up with three things that Joe Biden and Democrats have done to improve, you know, my life and the life of others who, you know, have all but been forgotten when it comes to people such as Donald Trump. And so making sure that we give everybody an opportunity, you know, not Donald Trump, but certainly Joe Biden and the Build Back Better plan. You know, who could say that it's not a positive to see that the streets and roads that have been like they've been bombed after every winter? I don't know about you in West Dallas, but in the city of Milwaukee, after every winter, it's like the streets have been bombed and your car goes through this battering and you're out all this money because you have to get the front end of your car. Has that been an issue in West Dallas?
Not really that I'm aware of.
Yeah, but it certainly has been in the city of Milwaukee. You can talk about so many different things that the Biden presidency has been working on. And think about how many things, Robert, that were denied opportunities. Certainly, President Biden made an attempt to help those who have college debt, knowing that many of the people who went to college have been gouged. President Biden just recently has attempted to, again, cap credit card late payments to 8%, where on average they're 30%. I mean, these are things that help everybody. And yet, you know, you can say that to the other side and they're oblivious to those kinds of things.
Have a good day. Thank you.
You too. Thank you very much for the call. You know, I just will continue as we delve deeper into what the patriotic millionaires are talking about. And you who are on the other side of it, I wonder what your thoughts are again of the fact, you know, the fact that the people who are talking about this aren't the average person who people say are jealous of the people who have all the money. No. No. And the more we drill down on what the patriotic millionaires talk about, the more opportunities, the more chances I think that we can maybe convince people or get people to, because they're not listening to clearly to the average person. The average person such as themselves, you know, get dismissed because we live in a society who believes he who has the goal in the end rules. You know, he who has the most toys somehow wins. I never understood that analogy. That, you know, since we all, you know, are born and anybody that's born is going to die, all of us have that in common, the rich, the poor, the good, the bad, the black, the white, the great equalizer, the male or female, the great equalizer. The educated, the non-educated, all of us are going to die. And so when you live in the society that says he who has the most toys in the end wins, we wind up with, you know, injustice in a society. And the fact that we can't share and make sure that during the time that we're here on this planet, the short period of time that we're here, that we would do something to make it possible that everybody gets a chance to live a decent life. Man, that's all anybody's asking. They're not asking you to give up your wealth. You know, this is not that. We're asking you to be fair and just and equitable in a society. And when people who have the money that the patriotic millionaires have step to the forefront and say, we're going to say this, you can't, those who are equally wealthy can push back, but not to the degree that they can say, well, you know, the people who are jealous of us because we've been successful. No, it's more than that. It's a fact that people who need a hand up can't get it in the society because people who don't need a hand up are getting it in the society. The decision is all of ours, and we get to make that decision once again this November. But you should think long and hard about the decision that you make, again, based on what, you know, Morris Pearl said, I don't need, and the book says, tax the rich, how lies, loopholes, and lobbyists make the rich even richer. It's Monday, a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show, 844-967-2789.
In time, you're gonna pay. Ain't it funny? It's funny how time slips away.
All right, welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Ban cell phones in schools. Teachers and students weigh in. Two teachers feel relief, but a student says they're not the real problem. Plus, progress on sports betting should be celebrated. You know, I've constantly talked about my 12 years that I spent in Milwaukee Public Schools, and I talked about even then the scourge of cell phones and the impact that the cell phones had in the classroom and in the schools. And when we're talking about education, to possibly attempt to educate a child who has access to a cell phone in their possession, in their classroom, who can use that cell phone while a teacher's attempting to educate, is more than an albatross. It actually should be criminal. Calvin, you're a young guy. You had cell phones when you were in school. Did they allow you to have your cell phones in the classroom?
It was up to the teacher's discretion. Most weren't happy if you had it out. I think it's become more pervasive than it even was when I was in high school. When right. I was in school, everyone had smartphones and everyone knew how to use them, but it seems like now kids have become, I don't know, like one with their cell phone. Yeah. In a way that we weren't.
And did they use the cell phone during class time, or was it clearly, if the teacher saw it, it wasn't tolerated? But
yeah, no, I mean, I definitely used my phone when I wasn't supposed to. Right. But if the teacher saw it, a lot of them would take it for the rest of class.
Right. Okay. So as a retired Montgomery County Public School teacher, student phones were a major factor in my decision to close out my teaching career. Now, let's talk about banning cell phones with students. Your thoughts, 844-967-2789. Unless there is an expansive effort, no one parent is going to put their child in the position of being the only one of their friends without a phone. Socially, it would be devastating. The irony is that the phone use is preventing healthy social interaction. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Parents are very influential in Montgomery County public policies. No student wants their mom to be the leader in the school system. Railing against cell phones, the fact alone is a big deterrent for any one parent to speak out. Parenting is hard enough. To have this fight brought into the home would escalate tensions with most teens. Parents are in a no-win situation. Absolutely. I'm not advocating outright banning of cell phones, you know, with students. People are in such a rush to ban things today. You know, if something doesn't go according to the way we like it, ban it. And so once you have entered into that slippery slope, you get to where we are now. So now it's banning cell phones. Tony says on a text line, I heard a recent study discuss that phones were toxic to kids, but an entire school system has to ban them. It doesn't work individually. Tony, I will say to you that I agree that the decision should be made by the districts themselves, and it is cowardly of districts to leave that up, and that kind of a decision up to a parent or to an educator. The educator is in a no-win situation. The parent is in a no-win situation. The district has to have the courage to make that call and make that decision, and districts should be doing that, I think, across the board. You don't need to have your cell phone in the classroom. It's not an appendage, even though now it appears to be that way. You know, because people accept it as that, and there's nothing that can be done to get young people and pry them away unless it is a policy that is created by the district. Here's a response from Napoleon. Payphones are non-existent. Society has adjusted to everyone having cell phones. The issue is not, Napoleon, the society adjusting to everybody having cell phones. It is whether or not the cell phone interferes with the education of the child. And as I stated before, after 12 years in the school system, it absolutely interferes with the education of the child, because a teacher can't compete with a child who has a smartphone. You know, and so the issue again is whether or not the districts have the courage to make a policy, which they have the right to do, to make a policy that says no cell phones in the classroom. Didn't say no cell phones at school, but no cell phones in the classroom is one of the decisions that should be made that will make the adjustment and correct what is causing the lack of education to continue in many schools, school districts, urban as well as rural, as well as suburban. Children don't need to have access to their cell phones during class. And, you know, because what's going on that they need to have that? If there's an emergency, do what used to happen when I was in school. I get it. No, Calvin, we didn't use smoke signals. But call the school office and say that you need, there's an emergency, you need to talk to the child. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.